was raised in Guanajuato. That's where I was born. For 1,000 years, that's where my family grew the corn. Farming's what we lived by, and farming's what we knew. And then the gobiernos signed NAFTA, and our farming days were through. I had to leave the village, there was no other way. I had to find work somewhere, or starve if I should stay. In Ciudad de Mexico, I tried to survive, but the colonias were full, there was no work to stay alive. I went to Tijuana, the maquila factories. People living by the sewage, dying on their knees. It was then in desperation, I knew I had to go. Leave the country I was born in, the only one I know. Across the unknown deserts, to the other side, around the wall that stretches on 100 miles wide. I trudged on for days, I don't know how far I got, but I never knew in all my life the sun could be so hot. My feet had turned to blisters, my water bag run dry. I thought about mi madrecita as I looked up at the sky. I lay down for the last time, parched upon the ground. Maybe someday my body will be found. Eaten by the vultures, bones bleached in the sun. Maybe I'll go to heaven, if there is one. And I guess someone in California, who wants to make their fields green, gonna have to find another Mexican to keep their dishes clean.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman, and if you're just catching up with us, we're listening to Why Americans Tolerate Torture. David Swanson interviews Rebecca Gordon, argues that torture has become increasingly acceptable in the years since Bush and Cheney left office.
When I was a philosophy student, torture was the quintessential example of something
right.
evil, if you wanted to
of
talk about
of what you
about.
Wouldn't do.
Right. That's just an example anybody would pull out of something no one would ever do. Now, as you discuss at length and to great effect in your book, there's a debate and there's an ethics discussion about the ethics of torture or of opposing torture. What? How are philosophers talking about this now?
Well, you know, I hesitated about even including that chapter in the book, but, you know, it is an academic publisher. And the reason I even talk about the ethicists, the philosophers, is that their very arguments are the same ones that you also see in the mainstream press. They're just dressed up in fancy, you know, ethical, philosophical language. But basically, what most of them do is they make what I think is a mistake, which is they act as if torture was something you would do in the moment because you have a crisis on your hand. And so for utilitarians, which is the way most of us most of the time think about the ethical decisions we make, it means you stop and think if you have time what's going to bring about the greatest good for the largest number of people? And so you have a problem, you're Jack Bauer, and you have a terrorist in front of you, and he knows where the bomb is that's going to blow up Los Angeles. You have 2 hours to get the information out of him. Do you torture him? This is a problem that is so common that it has its own name. It's called the ticking time bomb problem. And a lot of people have debunked it. And in fact, this is the one case in which somebody is most likely to hold that because he knows what the time limit is. So even if the person has the information, which oftentimes you don't know that you actually do. But this is the argument that the utilitarians make. The deontologists. So deontology is this other way of doing ethics that says
In fairness to utilitarians, myself yes. being a professed one, isn't this the argument that bad utilitarians make who ignore all of the horrible side effects that you're going to tell us about in a minute?
I don't know if it's fair to say they're bad, because they're certainly serious. But what I would say is that there's also a utilitarian argument against torture.
Indeed.
Which is, and it's not genuinely utilitarian, it's instrumental. It says basically, if we torture people we capture on the battlefield, then if our soldiers are captured, they'll get tortured too. And so it's about the consequences. It's not about whether it's wrong, whether there's something in the action itself that's wrong, but it's more about what the consequences would be for the people we care about more than we care about the people we've captured. Real utilitarianism says there's no distinction in between the personhood of your enemy soldier and the personhood of your own soldier. But we have this tendency to sort of put together in this as if it were everybody and say the greatest number is really the greatest number of Americans. And there's a real tendency to make that slip.
Right. So you have the simple-minded dumb utilitarian, then you have the xenophobic nationalist utilitarian. But
exactly.
If you had an informed, intelligent utilitarian who looked at the fact that it won't actually work, that you have to develop a whole program that's going to have all sorts
right.
of evil side
yes.
effects, that is going to be abused inevitably, and so you know
right.
that's looking at consequences. It's just looking at all the consequences. Right.
Exactly. And I think it's a good argument. The only thing I think that argument and I don't disagree with that argument, because I think that it's true. And one of the consequences is that because you can't just torture without practice, you have to keep practicing and you have to build an infrastructure, and it also has a demoralizing effect on the people who do it. I'm also interested in the demoralizing effect that it has on the society that knows it's being done.
Yes,
and
indeed.
And so that's why I think you also need to go a little bit further and look at what are some of the moral habits that we form when we allow people to be tortured for our own protection. Does that make sense?
Exactly, yes.
So, I mean, I had a working title for this book, which was A Nation of Cowards. And the publisher quite reasonably thought that that might be a little too strong. But my concern is that, in fact, by saying whatever it takes to guarantee my personal safety must be done, that to me is the definition of cowardice. And I believe with my guy Aristotle that when we act in a cowardly way, we in fact develop a habit of cowardice. And I think that in fact, you know, modern neurology does, you know, what they're learning about how we work and how the brain changes, our repeated thoughts and our repeated actions do actually affect the structure of who we are, not only, you know, not only in our memories, but also literally physically in our flesh, in our brains.
I think it's
not a good thing.
It's a very important point, and one that I don't look at enough, because I'm always looking at the point that I think is simultaneously true, that it doesn't work, that it makes us less safe, that it's a recruiting tool for more terrorism and so forth.
Right.
I think that
right.
can be...
Right, and that's an important point, too. But I'm concerned about what it then makes us. For example, say we want to shift our concern for a moment from torture to assassination by drone. If we are a society which has become acclimated to the idea that somebody must be tortured to keep me safe, how much easier is it for me to say, oh, well, and terrorists, without any kind of legal action at all, without ever being brought to trial, without any kind of defense, may be executed half a world away, whether they are U.S. citizens or not, simply because they have been designated as terrorists? It becomes easier to accept that if we have become accustomed to accepting whatever needs to be done to keep us safe. In a way, it's basically a denial of mortality. It's this quixotic belief that if the government can just protect us enough, we will never die. And if somebody else has to suffer or die, well, that's the price. But we're not paying it.
And the polls that you begin with suggest that that people are increasingly accepting of the torture argument, but are significantly more accepting of the murder argument.
Right.
That is, the president
they're,
can
they're
go...
They're even more willing to murder people than torture them, which is interesting, isn't it, in a rather frightening way.
I think it's a selfish, xenophobic problem.
We don't have a consensus that killing people is wrong. We used to have a consensus that torturing them was wrong.
That's right. That's right. And it's harder for the torturer to torture and for the nation that tortures mm-hmm. to live with itself as a nation that tortures. But for a nation to know that the president is going through a list of men, women, and children on Tuesdays and picking which ones to murder, and somebody somewhere is pushing a button, and it's done very cleanly, and we don't have to see any videos of the suffering and the screaming, it's somehow easier, even though most people would rather be tortured than murdered.
Or think they would. They don't actually know. And it's interesting, when I lived in and worked in Nicaragua, the North Americans I was with, I'm with you. I'm opposed to mortality. I don't like the idea of dying. My great fear was not being tortured, it was being killed. Most of the North Americans I worked with, their fear was torture. They weren't afraid of dying nearly as much as they were of being tortured. So I think that we probably can't make generalizations about that. But I also think we don't have to separate them, because I think they are a seamless garment. They are part of the whole process of war and of the kind of power regime that it takes to keep, you know, capital in power. And I think that they are different, but I don't think they're unconnected. The one thing I want to bring us back to, though, is this question of torture in U.S. prisons. I mean, it's no accident that the folks at Abu Ghraib, the lower down folks who were reservists, were many of them corrections officers in their ordinary civilian life. And the things that they did in Abu Ghraib were not unfamiliar to them because they had done them before. And there's a famous quote from Corporal Grainer who was one of the ringleaders. He says, "The Christian in me knows it's wrong, but the corrections officer in me loves to see a grown man piss himself." And, you know, one of the ways we've become inured to torture is by watching police procedurals, you know, Law and Order, SVU. Are we going to rough up the perp? Are we going to threaten the perp with being raped if he goes to jail? As if rape were an ordinary part of a sentence, right?
Yeah.
We've come to accept it as so normal, we don't even question it. Or when I say we, I mean many of us. Not all of us. And that's my final point. We can stop this.
We have about a minute left, so that's great timing. let me just ask one final question, which
sure.
is, if we have this problem of torture and we have this new problem of assassination and we have the ongoing problems of kidnapping and rendition and lawless imprisonment, all of this seems to come out of the idea of war. At some point, as ethical beings, don't we have to take on the institution and the military funding that is generating this whole range of atrocities?
Absolutely. And, I mean, you know that you and I don't disagree about this. The only thing I would say is, even if the U.S. did not have the industrial military complex that it does, we would still be in the position of imprisoning the largest absolute number of human beings in the world in our prisons. And most of those are people of color. So we would still have a problem of torture, and if you include capital punishment, murder, even without war. But obviously war does it on a much greater scale. And yes, that is the problem we have to confront, and we have to confront the economic benefits that some people derive from war. No question about it.
Very well said. The book is Mainstreaming Torture. The author is Rebecca Gordon. Rebecca, thank you very, very much for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Well, thank you very much.
Hear great speeches and interviews at Access Sacramento every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
used to tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line, just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, I made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done, brother. Can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower up to the sun, brick and rivet and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done, brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we look swell, full of that Yankee doodly-dum. Half a million boots went slogging through hell, and I was the kid with the drum. Say, don't you remember, they called me Al, it was Al all the time. Why don't you remember, I'm your pal. Say, buddy, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, ah, gee, we look swell, full of that Yankee doodly-dum. Half a million boots went slogging through hell, and I was the kid with a drum. Oh, say, don't you remember, they called me Al, it was Al all the time. Say, don't you remember, I'm your pal, buddy, can you spare a dime?
He's a real clueless man, killing kids in distant lands, making all his clueless plans for victory. Doesn't have a single clue, claims that Jesus told him to, doesn't care a bit for you.
Yeah.
factory, making all his evil plans for misery, making sure that he lives on in infamy.
George W., I'm one of your biggest fans, but I do have one little problem. When you walked into the party, we Republicans liked you a lot. But when reporters say you have a wild past, they're putting us on the spot.
I can assure you there's no sex affairs, but some stuff I forgot. I can't recall, was there schnapps in my coffee? Schnapps in my coffee.
Oh, you're so vague. We just don't know a darn thing about you. You're so vague.
So vague.
I just don't think this song is about me. About me. About me. Well, 10 or 20 years ago, perhaps it was even more, I may have done some coke, although I've been off that stuff since age 4.
But you know, since you've been governor, you've locked kids up for less.
I got a hero whose torch I can carry, Mary and Barry.
It's your cocaine.
If none of the voters remember
the cocaine,
I'll win by a nose next November. Won't I? Won't I? Hey, is there going to be a straw poll? Because I brought my own straw.
It's evening in the desert. I'm tired and I'm cold, but I am just a soldier. I do what I am told. We came with the Crusaders. Just got your letter, and this is what I read. So I'm fading from your memory, so I'm just as good as dead. We are the armies of freedom. We came to fight the infidel. There is no justice in the desert, because there is no God in hell. They say Osama's in the mountains, deep in a cave. A sea of blood in Baghdad, a sea of oil in the sand. Between the Tigris and Euphrates, another day comes to an end. It's Christmas in Fallujah. Peace on earth.
Messages from Access Sacramento.